Whence home this soundless roar doth come, when drowseth matter's dreary drum, on shores of bliss home booming breaks, all earth, all heaven, all body shakes. The bumblebee now hums along, baby Om doth softly sing his song. From Krishna's flute the call is sweet, 'tis time the watery God to meet. Cords bound to flesh are broken all, vibrations burst and meteors fall. The hustling heart, the boasting breath, no more shall cause the yogi's death. The God of fire with fervor sings, Om, Om, his joyous harp now rings. Prana, God with power sounds, the wondrous bells the soul resounds. All nature lies in darkness soft, the star divine is seen aloft. Subconscious dreams have gone to bed. 'Tis then that one doth hear Om's tread. Oh, upward climb the living tree. Hark to the cosmic symphony. From Om, the soundless roar from Om, the call for light o'er dark to roam. From Om, the music of the spheres. From Om, the mist of nature's tears. All things of earth and heaven declare. Om, Om, resounding everywhere. From Om, the music of the spheres. From Om, the mist of nature's tears. All things of earth and heaven declare. Om, Om, resounding everywhere.
Wonderful way to start the morning. So we've had three of the more thrilling days of my life, I have to say, so far, with our wonderful classes on birth, life, and death, and the soul's journey of again and again coming through birth and life and death, and the hope that this time we can learn the lessons that we need to learn, put out the energy we need to put out, and attune ourselves deeply enough to God that we can say goodbye to the birth, life, and death. So today's topic, the topic of Kriya Yoga, the art and science of Kriya Yoga, is a perfect conclusion to the 4 days of classes. If we want to get out of this series of endless birth, life, and death, Kriya Yoga is the way. Jyotish quoted yesterday the somewhat sobering statistics that are given in the Gita, that out of 1,000, one seeks me, and out of 1,000 who seek me, one finds me. But there is a recorded talk of Master, and Master says, on our path, the percentages are much better. So we can feel reassured by that. And why is that? Why are the percentages much better? The percentages are much better for one reason, because we have the techniques of Kriya Yoga brought by the masters. They're very specifically designed. Every one of them is designed to direct our energy in just the right way, to come inward and upward for self-realization. Masters said that 1 hour of Hong Sa practice was worth 24 hours of the normal sitting in the silence. So it's very, very directed in just what we need to learn, all the qualities of inwardness, breathlessness, attention at the spiritual eye. It's all part of our whole path, of all the four legs of the what Swami called the stool of Kriya Yoga, with its four legs, energization, Hong Sa, Om, and Kriya, each fundamental, each holding it up. So I wanted to, that was actually the one of the reasons that we have such an effective path and such better percentages, but the other reason is the presence of the masters. And the masters are very, very specifically helping us toward freedom if we will align with them. Master said, practice the techniques. I can help you through the techniques. It's a vehicle for us to make a connection. The masters are with us all the time, but it's through the techniques that they are able to work through us. So it's their presence that is energizing our practice of Kriya. Master said that Kriya Yoga is the airplane route, but it must be piloted by the masters. It's not enough just to sit and do breathing exercises. It's got to be in conjunction with the masters. I'll talk a little bit more about that, but I wanted to start this morning with a wonderful story from the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is one of the greatly loved scriptures here at Ananda, partly because Yogananda, our guru, said that he was Arjuna, who is one of the main characters in the Mahabharata, partly because he expounded upon it and explained it in such depth, and partly because it's just a fantastic story. And so I'm going to share one of the, I think, just a beautiful image for Kriya Yoga. Just a little bit of a backstory for those of us who might not be quite so fresh on the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is the story of two sets of cousins. One set of cousins, the Pandavas, are sons of King Pandu, who represents discriminative intelligence. Pure discriminative intelligence, the soul qualities. And his sons, the Pandavas, represent the chakras, or that part of our own self that is drawing our energy inward and upward toward God. The other set of cousins are sons of Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra represents the blind mind. The mind should be our friend, but the mind is clogged by impressions of the senses, and it gets very confused. And so Dhritarashtra marries Gandhari, who represents the power of desire, and the two of them together give birth to 100 sons. And these 100 sons, the Kauravas, are the forces within us that pull us into the senses, that pull our energy out into sense fulfillment and down into negative qualities. And both of these cousins are vying for the throne of the kingdom. And what is the kingdom? The kingdom is our body. Who is going to rule our body? Will it be the forces pulling us inward and upward to God realization, or the forces pulling us outward toward the senses? The Pandavas are the rightful rulers, but the Kauravas are not going to go without a fight. And so from childhood on, as these Pandu dies early in the story, and the both sets of cousins are being raised by Dhritarashtra in his, they're being overseen, their development is being overseen by Dhritarashtra, and they're very, very competitive. And the Pandavas are always just a little bit better than the Kauravas, and it just drives the Kauravas crazy. And the head of the brothers, the oldest brother, who represents material desire, Duryodhana, is the most eager to eliminate the Pandavas. He feels they just must be eliminated, or good for his side will never come. And so he convinces his father to get involved in a little scheme with him. And his father invites Pandavas to him, and he says, you know, there's a beautiful town near here. It's called Varnavata, and it's such a beautiful place to go for a little interlude. I think that the five of you should just go there and have a little time in this lovely town. It's part of our kingdom, and so on. And for various reasons, though they're not dumb, they decide to do what they're asked. And so they go to Varnavata, where meanwhile Duryodhana has managed to construct there a palace for them. And this palace, very beautiful, large palace, is built entirely of inflammable materials, lacquer, wax. It has large bowls, large vases distributed artfully around the palace that are filled with oil and ghee. So the whole place is just ready to go up like this. And the Pandavas are, as I say, they're not dumb, and they're walking around and they're going, there's something funny about this place, and they can smell it, you know, and they understand what it is. But they decide that it's best to wait and see what's going on here. Well, meanwhile, their beloved uncle Vidura sends a helper to them. And this helper is a miner. And a miner with an E, as in not a young man. He digs holes. And he says, I am going to dig a tunnel. And the tunnel will go from the palace, and it will go to the banks of the river Ganges. And when the time is right, you all can escape through the tunnel. So the Pandavas entertain the Kaurava spy in their midst by going out hunting every day, ostensibly to be hunting, but really they're kind of scoping out the area around the palace, and they're keeping this Kaurava spy away from the miner who's just digging, probably with Dwapara and Treta Yuga tools, very quickly digging this huge, huge tunnel. And the time is right, the time has come, and one night the Pandavas torch the palace and they escape with their mother through the tunnel. Now that image is just so beautiful, this inflammable palace. And the way towards safety is through the tunnel. And here we all sit in our little inflammable palaces, all on a slow burn at 98.6 degrees. And they're ready to go. They're ready to go. They are going. They're going. And yet we can escape to safety through the spine. And that's what Kriya Yoga is about, that we have to, we're both the Pandavas and the miner. We have to re-establish that tunnel. We have to get used to going through that tunnel. We have to get used to living in that tunnel. And Kriya Yoga is the technique par excellence to help us do that. In the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, in Master's Interpretation, he gives the most marvelous quotation, and this is it. The nervous system constitutes the one and only path to spiritual enlightenment, regardless of formal religious affiliation. When the energy can be coaxed to reverse its flow from the senses to the brain, it reveals to our consciousness another world. This stimulation of the nerves at their inner source awakens the desire for self-fulfillment and for self-realization. Read that again. This stimulation of the nerves at their inner source awakens the desire for self-fulfillment and for self-realization. That's what Kriya Yoga is. As we practice a technique to begin to bring our energy into the spine, into the brain, what are we doing? We're stimulating the nerves at their inner source. And by doing that, we're awakening a deeper and deeper desire for self-realization. And what is a desire for self-realization? It's devotion. Desire for knowing God. That's what devotion is. So that practice of Kriya is helping us to deepen our longing for God, and our deeper longing for God is helping us to practice Kriya more deeply. One little footnote to the story of the house of wax, of lacquer, is this. As the Pandavas were getting ready to flee the burning building, the Pandavas' mother was there with them too, Kunti. And she says to her second son, Bhima, Bhima represents the heart quality. Bhima represents devotion. And he is the hugest. He's gigantic. And he's the strongest and hugest of all of his brothers. And she says to him, Bhima, we're all very tired. It's the middle of the night. You're going to have to carry us through the tunnel. And so he takes, you know, her in his arms and a brother on each hip and a brother on each shoulder, and he runs through the tunnel. What a beautiful image, that it's that longing for God that is going to take us to freedom. And so that longing is going to be developed through repeatedly practicing, bringing that energy to stimulate the nerves inwardly. The practice of Kriya Yoga Swami said the most beautiful thing, I think, that he said about the practice of Kriya Yoga, that repeatedly practicing Kriya Yoga is going to take us to be able to see the world as Master sees the world. How does Master see the world? He sees the world as God, obviously, and he views it impartially. It's not good, it's not bad, it's not what I want, it's not what I don't want. It's all divine, it's all goodness. And trying to live in that place of inner bliss. One of the things that Jyotish and Devi were talking about Swamiji yesterday, and those of us who've been with him for a few decades now have felt like every year, every season has been different things that he's had to teach us. And during this season of life, there's just such a powerful lesson that he's sharing with us about living in a place that has nothing to do with the body. He's, as she said yesterday, he's just established in a place of bliss. And what Master tells us is that by deeper meditation, by deeper Kriya Yoga practice, the mind becomes established in a state of consciousness. He said it's like taking a hook and hanging it on a coat. Once the hook is hung on the coat, you don't have to keep hanging it up again. Once the coat is hung on the hook, you don't have to keep hanging that coat up again. It stays on the hook. And so the mind of the person who is established in their meditation and in their Kriya practice, as we see in Swamiji, there's this state of bliss. Doesn't matter if he's in a hospital bed. Doesn't matter if he's giving a talk to several hundred people. If he's laughing with friends, if he's watching a movie, the consciousness stays the same. And that impartial place of just being connected with who we really are, with this state of bliss, this is what Kriya Yoga is meant to give us, to not be so concerned about the little details. We learn that through Kriya, we can free ourselves of all the little self-definitions. Swamiji has told us again and again that if we take something which seems like an obstacle, perhaps a negative quality, perhaps a bad habit, and we really tune into it, just the way Jyotish was talking about yesterday, not to say like, oh, I have too much ego, or oh, I have too much anger, but to really look at that quality. What is that about? What's that little sensitive feeling that is at the start of that? What makes it so powerful in us? And get a sense of that feeling and take that with your Kriya breath and offer that up and say, that's not me. That's just one of those little whirlpools in the spine, and I'm offering that up to the spiritual eye. And as I exhale and bring that down again, I'm bringing down with it a sense of freedom, of the grace of the gurus, of that blessing. And if we continually do that, we less and less feel bound by the little parts of our life. We get to watch so much heroism among our friends here, and it has to do with seeing life in such an impersonal way. I was having a conversation with someone who doesn't live here, who's going through a difficult time, very difficult time, but I was a little shocked because she said, why is God targeting me like this? Why has God picked me out like this? And you know, I thought, golly, after all that I've seen here in the community, so many people going through so many things, very intense things, I've never heard that before. And I had to kind of, because it's a very common thought, but I had to kind of center myself and try to walk her through that a little bit. Because we're learning to live less and less involved in the littleness of who we are. There's one image I'd like to share to end with. I've been thinking about this. Devi referred to a story. She told us a story about being at Encinitas and looking at the sunset, and it was just so expansive and so much pure God, and then how she got caught by watching the surfers and went from the hugeness to the small little things. And I've been thinking about that in a different way. I've been thinking about how the mind wants to go deep. And we've all felt it this week. You just feel this pull to just go to this place of deep, deep freedom. And yet we can feel it in meditation. And then what happens? Our mind just sort of pops up again. Oh, let's go have some fun now. That was good. That was great. But now let's be restless for a while. Let's think about projects. Let's get involved in all these little things and go down, 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 come down, calm, still, pops up. And I was thinking about that and saying, what can I do? How will that end? When will that ever stop, that tendency to pop up? And what came to my mind was a story from the life of Sister Gyanamata, who was Master's most advanced disciple. She lived in the state of Washington. And when she first met Master, she had him over to dinner. And everyone was sitting around the table, and on the table there was a salt shaker, and it was a kind of a novelty salt shaker that had a weighted bottom on it, a rounded weighted bottom, so that when you tipped it over, it popped back up. Tip it over, pop back up, just like our minds. And so everyone at the table was passing the salt shaker around, and they'd try to push it down and, you know, try and make it stay there, and it would pop back up. And came around to Master, he was sitting there, and he did the same thing. He'd pop back up and pop back up. And he said, then I heard God say, do this for the benefit of Sister. And he put it down, he held his hand there, and it stayed down. And everyone was, of course, amazed. But I thought of that image, and I thought, that's how it's going to happen. By daily practice, by, as we've been talking about this week, Guru Bhakti, devotion to the Guru, Guru Seva, selfless service to the Guru, and by meditation, we're daily working our way through toward deeper and deeper purity of heart, toward convincing Master that we're really serious, that we don't want to live our lives popping back up and down again. And one day, when he knows that we're ready, just put his hand there and go, okay, you're ready. You can lie down in spirit. You can stay there with my blessings. So thank you all very, very much, and God bless you.